listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
I'm disappointed for our kids. I'm disappointed for the fans. Not disappointed in effort, but in execution with the two turnovers, it led to two scores, and they had zero. And it's hard to beat a top 25 team that way.
That was Arkansas coach Sam Pittman after the Razorbacks lost to Missouri the other day, 28-21 at Faurot Field in Columbia, snowy Columbia. First time Arkansas played a true snow game in over 30 years. The Razorbacks finished the regular season with a 6-6 record. Now they wait to see where they're going to go to a bowl. It's hard to figure out where they're going to go to a bowl right now because there are not really enough SEC bowl games for as many SEC-eligible teams that are teams that are eligible for bowls. So it's going to depend a lot on how many teams make the playoff. And so we're going to go through this week, and we'll guess where Arkansas is going to go to a bowl game, but we're not going to know for sure until Sunday night. We got a lot to talk about today. We'll kind of get into bowls and where we think Arkansas might end up, what the projections are saying this week. Bobby Petrino is reportedly a candidate, maybe even a finalist, for the football job at Charlotte. Hunter Yurecek says he's not interested in the South Carolina job. There are a lot of jobs that have come open now that you wonder if Travis Williams might be a candidate for those types of jobs, given the success that he's had the last couple of years. The portal opens next week. Sam Pittman's having surgery this week on his hip. And, there's also national signing period begins this week. So there's a lot going on, and we'll try to get into all of that today. The Razorbacks obviously losing the other day to Missouri. Christina, just kind of two things I think of. Number one, it's kind of the typical Arkansas-Missouri game, it feels like, at least up there. This is 3 years in a row where Arkansas has been winning in the fourth quarter, and they haven't been able to seal the deal. They've also lost three at Faurot Field by a total of 11 points. But then also, you know, Missouri, they've been doing this all year. I mean, they did it to Auburn. They did it to Oklahoma. They almost did it to South Carolina. And now they've done it to Arkansas. This is a team, and I guess you could even go further than this year's team. This is a program that seems to do really well in those late game situations. And, I mean, like I said, we've seen it happen to Arkansas 3 years in a row. Arkansas on the other end, a team that you know, very famously does not do well late in the game.
Yeah, I mean, this is where Missouri has thrived. And, you know, I said last week when we did our picks that I trusted Missouri more in kind of a messy, kind of weird late game situation than I trusted Arkansas in that. And I don't say that to gloat and say I was right, but it's the expectation that Arkansas has set, and it's the expectation that Missouri has set when you've watched their games this year. And so I think it was a pretty classic, like you said, Arkansas-Missouri game. It's a pretty classic Arkansas game with turnover issues, penalties, the same kind of problems we've seen plague them most of the year or in all of their losses. So it really kind of lined up with expectations that way. And I think you're right that it felt very classic. It, you know, people say that they feel like Missouri cares more about this game. And I don't know necessarily that it has to do with Arkansas specifically. I think just maybe the context of Missouri's seasons the last few years, or maybe it's the coaching. You know, they are ready for this final game of the year every year. They've been ready for Arkansas. And we've, like you said, we've seen them do it all year. Coach Pittman said in the week leading up, you don't want Eli Drinkwitz to have the ball last. You know, you don't want late in the game for Missouri to be able to make those kinds of plays like they did. And especially for Brady Cook, I mean, that's been his identity, especially this year. So, yeah, you're right. It just felt like a game that Missouri was prepared to win.
I'm just looking here at Missouri this year. Against Auburn, game-winning touchdown with 46 seconds left. Against Oklahoma, game-tying touchdown with 103 left, game-winning touchdown with 22 seconds left. Even against South Carolina, they scored a go-ahead touchdown with a minute 10 left, and then South Carolina comes back down the field, and Rocket Sanders scores a touchdown with 15 seconds left to beat them. Vanderbilt, they beat Vanderbilt in overtime. Vanderbilt scored first in overtime. Missouri answered, and then Missouri kicked a field goal. Vanderbilt missed a field goal. Now Arkansas, a minute. This is like half of their season has come down to really, you know, the last 2 minutes of the game. And way more often than not, they've been successful. You flip that over and you look at Arkansas and the games where they haven't been successful at the end. And I always say there's a fine line between being 4-8 and 8-4. Missouri's 9-3. Arkansas 6-6. watching them on the field on Saturday, you can't tell me there's a huge difference between those two teams. It really just comes down to who makes the plays in crunch time, and Missouri has been way better than that than Arkansas has been.
Yeah, that was what struck me in the lead up to the game too, was how closely matched they felt when you looked at different, you know, statistical categories, various, you know, how they had performed throughout the year. They really felt like they would be, you know, they feel kind of similar. You know, some of the mistakes they've made, some of the problems they've had aren't the same. But as far as, you know, how, you know, their production, both offensively and defensively, it felt similar. Arkansas even statistically performed better than Missouri, especially in SEC-only play. And so that was why it felt, you know, I think a lot of people kind of felt optimistic about Arkansas's chances. But again, yeah, it's just this is what Missouri has done. And, you know, maybe it comes down to coaching. Maybe it comes down to just the way that these, you know, they have a lot of veteran guys on that team. Maybe it's something about that. But, yeah, I mean, they were prepared for this, and they did what they've done all year.
And they take care of the ball.
Yeah.
Only 9 turnovers for Missouri in 12 games this year. You compare that to what Arkansas's done. 2 turnovers on Saturday obviously leads to 14 points. Arkansas in their 6 losses this year, listen to the stat, they have lost the turnover battle in those 6 games by a combined 18-1. And those 18 turnovers and that 1 turnover have led to 70 points off of turnovers for the opponents, 0 for Arkansas.
It's just,
that's losing football.
It's just crazy. Yeah, it is. It is. And when Arkansas's defense has, on the whole, played pretty well, you know, and they've just been put in these bad situations over and over again. And I imagine it's been really frustrating on the defensive side to work with that. I mean, especially in this game, it felt like Missouri had the ball. I don't remember the exact time of possession comparison, but it felt like some of those, the big thing too was when they would get, you know, they would get an Arkansas turnover, and then it wasn't like they were scoring on the next play. They would take 8 plays to go 30, 40 yards or whatever. And so the defense had to stay out there for so long and then come right back out because of another problem, you know. So it was just, it just kind of kept happening, and it's been the problem we've seen all year.
Yeah, I think one of the concerning things for Arkansas is that the players who are committing these turnovers are their star players. Mm-hmm. They're the players who, you know, it's like, it's not like C.J. Brown in the Texas game where, you know, it's the first time in forever that he's touched the ball and he gets it knocked out. I mean, against Missouri, you've got Talen Green, who has been terribly turnover prone this year. And I'll get into that in just a second. But he has a fumble, you know, just carrying it out away from his body. You know, exactly what they teach you not to do as a ball carrier. As it knocked out, it leads to a short field and a Missouri touchdown. And then Jaquindon Jackson, you know, give Johnny Walker credit on that one because, you know, he did. It was a true strip there. But, you know, it's a fumble, and it sets up another short Missouri touchdown drive. For the longest time, they did not have a long touchdown drive. I think one was 41 yards. I think one was 30 yards.
Yeah.
They did have a couple of longer drives that resulted in field goals. You know, but until that you know, two-minute scenario, I guess it was more like 4 minutes, but it was like a two-minute drill is what it felt like, you know, where they score at the end of the game. They were not forced to go down the field. And so you're just kind of giving them points, and you can't do that against a good team. That's what you heard Pittman say, you know, at the top. If you want to be the top 25 team, you can't do that, and you can't get away with it. And it just, I think that's been the frustrating thing about this team all year, is the fact that they have just given, they've gift wrapped teams points, whether it be Talen Green fumbling on the 10 against Texas A&M, whether it be him getting strip sacked in the end zone, you know, for Ole Miss's first touchdown. It's just been play after play after play after play in loss after loss where the turnovers have been what have killed Arkansas. You know, some teams, you know, sometimes you commit turnovers and the other team just made the plays. But I feel like for Arkansas this year, it's been more of an us problem, a more of an Arkansas problem that, you know, they just haven't been able to get fixed. I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's lack of discipline. I don't know what that is. But I do know that that's why they're 6-6 and not sitting there like Missouri is with a record of 8-4, 9-3 right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's the turnovers are the story of the season, it feels like. And, you know, we've talked to Sam repeatedly after games, in the lead up to games, about, okay, how do you fix this? What is the turnover problem? We asked him again after the game on Saturday, and he basically just said, you know, he was saying that it's frustrating and they work on it all the time. And, you know, there's only, at a certain point, you know, there's only so much you can do, I guess, in practice to prevent these problems, and they say they're doing it. But it's just how it continues to be a problem throughout the entirety of a season is really baffling. And like you said, it's guys that are star players. It's not guys you can afford to kind of take out of the game necessarily, or, you know, guys that in theory should maybe learn from some of those mistakes, because it keeps happening over and over. And you would think at a certain point you would learn from it and be able to prevent it. And, you know, maybe that's easier said than done, but you're right. I mean, it was crazy to watch throughout the entirety of the regular season this problem continue to arise. And yeah, we talked about penalties, a lot of pre-snap stuff. In the last two games, they've had just a ton of issues with that, especially early on in those games. That kind of set them back. I mean, they lost the turnover margin against Louisiana Tech and still managed to win. But Louisiana Tech is the kind of team you can maybe beat when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that in SEC games. And we saw them do it, and we saw them lose.
Only two games this year when Taylen Green did not fumble at least one time.
Yeah.
UAPB and Auburn. Now, he didn't always lose them, but he's lost five fumbles now, many of them here late in the season. He's lost a fumble in three straight games against Texas, Louisiana Tech, and Missouri. He also lost the one against A&M, had the big one against LSU. But 12 fumbles, five of them lost, and then he's thrown nine interceptions. That's 14. So basically he's fumbling once a game on average, and he's committed 14 turnovers on his own through 12 games. You can't do that if you're the quarterback. I mean, you cannot. You think about all the times where you see these quarterbacks where they've gone – 100 passes, 150 passes, whatever, without an interception, and then, you know, they're not fumble prone either. That's a huge difference between Arkansas and the best teams right now, is that their quarterback is just not, I don't know what the word is, but it just, the appearance is that he's not careful with the ball.
Yeah, Arkansas leads the country in total fumbles with 28.
Is it 28 now?
28 now, okay. Yeah, because they had three the other day. And then they're tied for second with 13 fumbles lost. Oklahoma has 14. Louisiana Tech has 14. And then South Carolina is tied with them for 13.
What's OU's record?
I don't remember.
Six.
Yeah, 6-6.
I mean, that's, what's Louisiana Tech's record? They're 5-7. Five and,
yeah.
They would have been 6-6 if not for a miracle Hail
South
Mary.
South Carolina is, how are they doing what they're doing? I don't know.
maybe they've all come in clusters for them. I'm not sure. But anyway, Arkansas loses this game. They're 6-6 now. So we said they're going to go to a bowl game. We'll see where it is. I've got some thoughts here. But this is what Sam Pittman had to say after the game on Saturday about just getting to a bowl game after a season in which Arkansas went 4-8.
7-5 or better, going to the bowl game. I mean, I do. But I'm excited that we're going to get an invite somewhere. And have another opportunity to have another winning season, winning bowl game.
So Sam Pittman talking about a chance maybe to get to they are going to go to a bowl game. It feels a lot like 2 years ago. It's you're going to a bowl game, and it's going to determine whether or not you're 7-6 or you're 6-7. And nobody's happy with 7-6, but that feels a heck of a lot different than if you go 6-7 in a season.
No, it definitely does. It changes the vibe completely. And I know it's funny the state of bowl games right now, because – a lot of people, across college football feel like bowl games aren't that important anymore. You know, half your players aren't playing in them, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you can't miss out on one. You've got to make one.
Yeah.
The excitement for actually going there and playing in it or whatever might be low, but you've still got to get there. So it's kind of interesting, the state of that. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. You want to win your bowl. You want to finish with the better record. You want to go into the off season off of a win. You want to, assuming you have a lot of guys who are younger or maybe behind on the depth chart, because of whether it's transfers, opt-outs, things like that, you want to feel good about those guys that are staying with you. You want to get a little bit of work with them and kind of see where they're at as you head into an off season. So there's a lot you can gain from a bowl. But like you said, you need to win it.
So you've been looking at projections, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, what are people saying?
I'm still seeing a lot of Texas Bowl. Texas Bowl has been kind of trendy. A couple people have had Texas Bowl versus Baylor as the pick. Still seeing a decent amount of Liberty Bowl. I just feel like it's still too recent that they last played in the Liberty Bowl. I mean, the Liberty Bowl loves Arkansas, so if they want to pick them, they will. But I still feel like that's a little bit too recent. I did just see, I think it was maybe USA Today, had Gasparilla Bowl against UConn, which that just all felt kind of like an odd combo. But sometimes with bowls and who they're selecting, you just never really know. But it seems like Texas Bowl is kind of the trendy pick. It was the same case last week. I was curious how much a loss would change that. But Texas Bowl versus Baylor has been a pretty common matchup so far.
See, that would surprise me if they get into this pool of six bowls, because think about all the seven-win teams that are in front of them.
Yeah.
And not that, you know, it's bowls are certainly not a meritocracy. They're not. It's all, you know, it's more geared toward TV ratings, I think, more than anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's also there's a component of fan travel and those types of things. But I agree with you that the Liberty Bowl, they were there 2 years ago. I just don't see that happening. That would surprise me. Texas Bowl wanted them 4 years ago when they were 3-7 after Sam's first season. Obviously, they were going to go and play TCU, and the game didn't get to happen. It's been 10 years since they've been there, so I don't know. Maybe there's some validity there, but it just seems to me like if you're just looking at the records, Arkansas is going to fit more into this Birmingham Gasparilla type deal, because if you're not aware of how the bowl selection goes, you've got the teams that are in the playoff. Citrus Bowl gets the next pick, and then you've got this pool of six bowls that pick after that, and then who's left. Birmingham Bowl will get assigned someone by ESPN Events, which runs that bowl. Gasparilla Bowl will get assigned someone by ESPN Events. And then this year, the expectation is that the SEC is going to have one more team that you're going to have to place in a non-SEC bowl. By the way, going into the weekend, there were 79 bowl-eligible teams. There were 14 other teams that could become bowl-eligible, and somehow, and there were 82 bowl bids that could be given out. And somehow we ended up with 82 bowl-eligible teams for the 82 bowl bids. So everybody who's bowl-eligible this year is going to get to go. I was doubtful going into this last week that would happen, because I just figured that, you know, out of 14 teams, you might have more than three that won. But I guess maybe they were 5-6 for a reason going into that final weekend.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. That surprised me. Because there's some years where you end up having to have some 5-7 teams in, right? You don't usually end up having enough bowl eligible. I feel like that's been more common. Yeah. So, yeah, that's very odd. I'll be curious, you know, any of the SEC teams that have to go out to, you know, like you said, non-SEC affiliated bowls, like the Armed Forces Bowl has done it a few times. That one's supposed to be Big 12 versus, I think, American or Conference USA. So that's an option. That's in Fort Worth, I think, right?
I think it's against one of the service academies.
Oh, really? I was reading about this. There's some kind of auto bid that they can be in it, but they don't have to be.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think maybe some of the service academies are maybe above it this year. I'm not really sure. I can't remember exactly.
Well, I don't think Air Force qualified for a bowl game.
Right, right. And then I think Navy and Army are probably going to get better bowls.
Okay. Yeah, but, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised with an SEC team getting somewhere like Fort Worth.
For sure. Yeah, I imagine we'll probably see an SEC team there. I think my pick right now for Arkansas is probably the Birmingham Bowl. I feel like I spoke it into existence by talking about the Butt Trophy on this podcast a couple of months ago. I feel like I just brought that energy in, so I'm sorry if you didn't want them to go to the Birmingham Bowl. But no, I mean, I've seen a projection for that a couple times. I've seen Memphis. I think I've seen them against Memphis in the Birmingham Bowl as a projection. UNC, and then this is Athlon that I've got pulled up right now, and they have NC State versus Arkansas in the Birmingham Bowl. So that and the Texas Bowl, it seems like, is what most people are picking right now. But also, the projections are hard because it's like you really just don't know until it comes out. You know,
you just don't know until the playoff is settled.
Exactly.
I mean, what happens if Alabama gets in the playoff?
Yeah.
Because it seems, or South Carolina.
Yeah.
Seems like there's a chance one of those two might. I mean, Lane Kiffin's out here campaigning for Ole Miss still to get in. I think that's unlikely, you know, especially after the way they played in the Egg Bowl the other day. But, you know, if you get four SEC playoff teams, then all of a sudden one of these 6-6 teams, their bowl bid potentially becomes a lot better. And so we just don't know. We don't know until this week's conference championship games. We got a lot more to talk about. Bobby Petrino and the Charlotte job. What Hunter Yurecek said about South Carolina and much more. First, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kindle King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kindle King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Also want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports with analysis, latest in recruiting. Recruiting season about to really pick up, by the way, with the signing period and the portal about to open. Unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. If you're watching our podcast on YouTube, we appreciate it. Want to tell you, you can also find an audio version on Spotify and Apple. Search YouTube for our video podcast. Wherever you want to find us, you can search Whole Hog Sports, and we'll be there. It's a five-day-a-week podcast. And we talk about Razorback football, basketball, baseball season's coming up. I can't wait for that. But we talk about it all here on our podcast. We appreciate you being with us today. Bobby Petrino is reportedly a candidate for the head coaching position at Charlotte. This was a story that was posted yesterday on the Charlotte Observer website. It says that Petrino is one of three finalists for the job, along with Tim Brewster, who is Charlotte's interim head coach, actually led the 49ers to a 2-0 record. After a 3-7 start to the season, the North Carolina State defensive coordinator, also apparently a finalist for this job. The Observer says that it is unlikely that the interim coach gets promoted. I think they said it's a long shot. There is a picture floating around. You don't know what you can trust anymore. But there is a picture floating around of Petrino, I guess, getting off of the plane at the Charlotte airport. Football Scoop also saying that Petrino is a finalist for this job. I think they said that there were five candidates still in the running. I probably would tend to trust the Observer a little bit more if they've got the three. They did say that this was as of Sunday, a 24 to 48 hour window for Charlotte to make the job, or to make the hire for its head coaching job. And one thing that I noticed in there that I didn't notice at first glance was that the chancellor is part of the search for this, and it's Sharon Gaber, who used to be the provost at the University of Arkansas when Petrino was the head coach. So there is a connection.
That. I was just about to bring that up, because as I was pulling up the Observer story on Petrino just to get ready for this segment, I skimmed the story and saw Sharon Gaber. And I remember I went to high school with her son, which is really funny. But so she was there 2009 to 2015 at here at Arkansas. So, you know, familiarity with Petrino there. So, you know, that's
the
really interesting. Which is very interesting. Arkansas was plenty familiar with the good and the bad and brought him back anyway. So what does that even mean anymore? So it's interesting. I was surprised to hear this at first. Charlotte is not a particularly great program. I don't know how
relatively new to the FBS.
Yes, I don't know how serious they want to be about football. I think the fact that they've moved to FBS says, you know, that they want to be. But you know, I'm surprised by this, but I guess maybe I shouldn't be.
Well, you know, when you look at what all the teams are doing right now, they compete in the American Athletic Conference, and I think the American's about to lose a number of teams as part of the next wave of conference realignment. Some of them have pledged that they're going to stay, like Memphis is staying, South Florida is staying, but I think they are losing some teams as part of this latest wave. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But the point being, it's a conference I feel like you can go in and win in. I mean, the teams that have historically won in that conference, they leverage that into getting a raise up to the Power Four level. And you know, their head coach, I think they paid him $1 million this year.
Right, and Petrino makes more than that.
Petrino makes about a 1.6, and I think he's due a pay raise in year two. I think that's right. But, so they're going to have to make a commitment to football if they're going to hire him. But, you know, on one hand, I think Petrino is happy being a coordinator in the sense that he, you know, and he has even said this, but in the sense that all he has to do is just teach football.
Yes.
I mean, like, there's none of the, all of the periphery that a head coach has to put up with. But on the other hand, I just have a feeling that once you've been a head coach, it's hard to step down into that more of a subordinate role and not be running the show. And, you know, so you wonder about whether or not he kind of gets that itch and is ready to be a head coach again.
Right. And if he wants to, you know, when he eventually retires, does he want to retire from a coordinator job or does he want to retire as a head coach? You know, so, I mean, that's definitely something. It's your point about, you know, coaches wanting to just be responsible for football.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're seeing that a lot more. I mean, we just saw Gus Malzahn leave UCF. And there was something in the soup there with there being some hot seat talk about him at UCF. But, you know, him leaving to go to Florida State to become a coordinator, you know, you could see that as a step down. You could see it as a step up, you know, however you want. But to me, I see it as a step, you know, you're, like you said, you're going into a subordinate role. I see that as a step down from being in charge of a program, especially UCF being in the Big 12.
Even though sometimes you get a pay raise.
It's
for
exactly,
the for the
which
step
is
down.
Also very interesting. Yeah. Did he get one?
Malzahn, I don't know if he did or not.
We don't know.
You know, I figure Petrino got one, though, from being the head coach at Missouri State to the coordinator, either at, I mean, because he left there to go to UNLV and was there for a cup of coffee, as he liked to say, for Ellis Johnson when he did the same thing to Petrino as a defensive coordinator here. But I would assume he was making more as a coordinator at Arkansas or A&M, maybe even UNLV, than what he was making at Missouri State.
Right, for sure. So it's just interesting to see. I think this will become more common at this level. I mean, you know, when Chip Kelly left UCLA for Ohio State, you know, we saw that move get made. So I think it's just, I think we'll start seeing it more and more, you know, especially with older coaches. I think once we start getting some, like, younger up-and-coming coaches who all they've known is kind of this portal NIL era kind of stuff, and they're better able and more willing, I should say, to play that game. I don't blame more old school coaches or coaches that have been at this for a long time for being unhappy with all of the responsibilities that are now heaped on them as basically general managers when they are in it to kind of coach football. I don't blame them for that at all. And I think we'll kind of see more coaches sort of make changes in their careers that reflect that.
You wonder if he takes that job at Charlotte, how it might affect the Missouri State program too, because he's got all of his former, all of his old coaches who you know, several of them are family members up there at Missouri State. You wonder if some of those might end up at Charlotte if he gets the job. We'll see how this works out. Travis Williams, you know his name is going to be in the mix for jobs this year, whether it be a coordinator position. You know, there have been some who have speculated that he might be a candidate at Florida State. I don't know that I've seen anything real legitimate about that to this point. But the fact that Florida State just pulled Malzahn away from a sitting head coaching job tells you that they're going to go out and they're going to make a push this offseason to make sure that obviously what happened this year never happens again, but that they're going to make a push to be right back up there at the top next year. UCF, I think whether or not it's legitimate, I think you're going to hear Williams' name floated for the UCF job because that's where he was under Malzahn before he got hired at Arkansas. Sam Pittman was asked after the game the other day about whether or not he wanted to keep the staff intact. Sydney, this is clip three, if you'll get that pulled up. But, you know, any time that you have, you know, honestly, any off season, I expect there to be multiple coaching changes. I mean, the days of retaining your entire staff, those days are over. It just does not happen very often, if at all. But especially when, you know, like Arkansas, they haven't been great on offense. They haven't been great on defense. But they've had pockets where they have been really good this year to the point that it's going to make you notice a Travis Williams. It's going to make you notice that Petrino is there if you didn't already. And Pittman was asked the other day about the staff, about whether or not he wanted to retain the staff next year. And I thought it was an interesting response.
I mean, I got a good staff, so I think there'll be guys that have opportunities to do something. I think they enjoy it here at Arkansas Yeah, I'd like to have him come back, but we'll wait and see.
You know, so it sounds to me like a coach who knows that the wolves are at the door, so to speak, coming to, you know, try to hire coaches away.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got plenty of experience with that, you know, with the turnover they had a couple of years ago, losing Briles and Odom. And so, you know, he's done it before. You know, he misfired with the Enos hire. But I think Williams was a good hire. You know, I think his first two, I think Briles and Odom were good hires. You know, he's done a good job with his
assistants. He's 4 for 5 hiring coordinators.
Yeah, he's done a good job, which is something that, you know, I think is important for someone like him who did not come from a coordinator background. You know, some people, where people kind of question your credentials as a head coach when you're a first timer. And I think having a really strong staff is so important for that. And I do think he's set himself up well in that regard. You know, the more bites you get at the apple, the more chances there are for you to misfire again. But we'll see, you know, if he ends up having to replace some of these guys, where they go.
And what does it look like going out and finding new assistants when, you know, I mean, it's no different going into this offseason as it was last offseason. Anybody who comes here knows that they're coming in for a head coach who is, you know, not – popular mm-hmm. among his fan base. I don't know if I want to say hot seat, because I don't know how hot the seat is yet, but you know, there is a good amount of discontent, I think we all know, with where Arkansas football is right now.
Yeah, I mean, that makes it really hard. It's the same thing with recruiting players. It's hard to convince guys.
Although with
to
recruiting
come.
Players now, you're just, well, I mean, when you've got 40-50 new players
right.
every year, you're basically just saying, hey, I know I'm here next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, and yeah. for most of those players, they're one-year hires, mm-hmm. and so I don't know that it's that, you know, and it's kind of like, and I don't mean to get off on a rabbit trail here, but it's kind of like these contracts for coaches. You know, used to, you would give the coach a 4-year contract, a 5, a 6-year contract to show the recruits, hey, you know, we believe in him. He's going to, you know, we believe in him so much that we're going to give him a contract that's going to keep him here through your senior year. I don't know that that's really necessary anymore. Whenever, you know, like 50%, if I don't know what the exact number is, but it feels like it's probably about half the players who come to your school are going to transfer within a couple of years. And so I don't know how, and I wonder if maybe, you know, with the house settlement and the fact that it doesn't seem like a lot of people feel like they can afford to fire their coaches yeah. this year, you know, maybe do we see something, a reset in the coaching market? Maybe you give them bigger annual salaries but shorter contracts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the buyout provisions are changed. I don't yeah. know, but it's certainly something I wonder about.
Yeah, some of these buyouts are so prohibitive. It's,
oh,
it's
my God.
Really, really hard.
You know, like somebody said yesterday, you know, Sam's got one of the cheapest buyouts in the SEC. Well, it's still like $12 million.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, it's like, just because it's one of the cheapest doesn't mean it's cheap. I said
right.
it would be like calling LeBron James one of the poorest billionaires. You know, I mean, if what are we doing here?
At a certain point, a billionaire is a billionaire.
A billionaire is a billionaire. Yeah, I mean, it's like, who cares if it's $12 million or $20 million or mm-hmm. I mean, what's $30 million among friends? Mm-hmm. And you look at the schools, and I didn't look up Neil Brown, so I may have to put my foot in my mouth here, but North Carolina firing Mack Brown, $2.8 million buyout. Purdue firing Ryan Walters, a $9 million buyout. Are you looking up Neil Brown's
yes,
right
I'm
here?
Trying to figure it out right now.
Okay, so Neil Brown fired at West Virginia yesterday too. There's a lot of people who think that Rich Rodriguez might be in line for that job after the work that he's done this year at Jacksonville State. Obviously, he got West Virginia to, you know, great heights about 15, 20 years ago. You see what Neil Brown's
buying?
It's
about 9.5.
So, again, these are all less. And, you know, again, Pittman's is in the $12 million range, and that is on the low end for an SEC team. Napier was like in the $27 million range, and Brian Kelly and Brent Venables, who a lot of people were ready to, you know, cut bait with, at least among the fan bases, I think they're more in like the $40 million range. And it just escalates from there, the more success a coach has had. But the point is, I wonder if, or 2 points. Number one, the firings that we have seen, whether it be the Power Four schools who have made a change, obviously the Group of Five buyouts are not going to be nearly, I mean, they may not even be $1 million.
Yeah.
We talked about Biff Poggi at Charlotte. He was making $1 million a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may have given him a Snickers bar to
yeah.
go away. I don't know. But I do wonder if the house settlement and the fact that everybody feels handcuffed right now, if it changes the way that they approach buyouts when the next round of negotiations come about.
Yeah, I think they'll probably have to. But going back to our Travis Williams conversation, I think the biggest thing for Arkansas with him is his recruiting prowess. I mean,
yeah.
so a lot of the best recruits they've gotten have been on the defensive side. I think him and his staff have done such a good job, and they would stand to lose a lot of those guys and to just lose the future of that recruiting ability. And that's also part of what makes Williams really appealing to other schools. So I think that's also a major concern beyond just the on-field performance of Travis Williams' defenses.
I mean, we've had Brandon Marcello on here before, and Brandon said that he thinks that Travis Williams is a rock star in the coaching profession, and that he's going to have a big future in front of him. Hunter Juracek said over the weekend, this was according to David Basil at I don't even know who, like who does David
who's
affiliate,
his affiliate
himself?
I don't know.
He's kind of KATV. He's kind of the buzz. He's certainly Little Rock Touchdown Club. David's just kind of there. And but anyway, he told David Basil that he had no interest in South Carolina. He said that's internet rumors, and that he's going to stay with Arkansas. It's hard. And I even made this comment to somebody I was talking about yesterday about this Petrino story to Charlotte, because I think it surprised some people who are around the program. And, you know, but I made this comment yesterday. It's just hard to, in this day and age, with everybody having a blog or a Twitter account, to really discern fact from fiction a lot of times. And, you know, so the story, I think it was even a message board post on a South Carolina, like 24/7 site, was that, you know, Juracek either was or recently had been in the mix for the job. Well, what does that mean?
Right. It was like, was he just on their initial list of guys? Did they call him?
Are they using a search committee? And this is just a name that the search committee, delivered to them?
Right. Yeah. I sent a message to a friend who is an actual South Carolina reporter, basically being like, is this, you know, is he? Because then you had people saying, oh, he's the front runner for the job. And the post that we had seen on this message board did not make it sound like he was the front runner. So I messaged a friend and said, is he the front runner? Is he a candidate? And he said his understanding was that, you know, Juracek was a name that had been floated and that they didn't really, South Carolina didn't really have a clear front runner at the time. Now, that was on Friday. Mm-hmm. That's been days now. But, you know, like you said, it's hard. And, we have to figure out when we're trying to, figure out what reports to share with our readers. You know, like the Observer report, we trust the Charlotte Observer, so we chose to, you know, share that reporting with readers. We have to kind of decide and vet, you know, what is worth, you know, mm-hmm. sharing with our people, and then what, you know, how do you kind of couch that in, you know, this is what we know versus what we don't know. It's a tough thing to navigate, I think, for everybody.
This is why our eyes are so red this time of year, because we're chasing down this crap at all hours of the day. Sam Pittman's going to have his hip replaced on Tuesday. He didn't coach on the sideline on Saturday. You know, he had said last week that he was taken off of his pain medicine, had to be out of his system for a week before he had his surgery. Basically, his plan this week, he said he's going to meet with six juniors today on Monday about, you know, trying to gauge their thoughts and give his thoughts on what he thinks their future plans might be. But he didn't coach on the field on Saturday, coached in the press box. First time he said, and you'll hear it in the clip, that he hasn't coached on the sideline during his entire career. Was a little bit of an interesting dynamic, but there was a lot of interesting stuff going on up at Columbia on Saturday. This is what Pittman had to say, though, about the hip surgery and about how it influenced the decision to coach from the press box.
For 150 days or whatever I've had, I wish it on nobody. It's I've had a knee replaced, and it's painful, you know, and been coaching 38 years and never not been on the sideline for a game. But I feel like I would have been more of a detriment to the team down there than I would doing the same thing up top and having a clear mind, not worried about the pain.
So it was Sam Pittman talking about the hip surgery. You know, we've watched him all year, and, regardless of what you think about him as a coach, you hate to see any person go through, the physical toll that this type of stuff takes. And, you know, we certainly wish him the very best in his recovery. I know that this is something that he's been, like a lot of people, they'll get to a surgery date, and, you know, it's kind of like this doom and gloom. I have a feeling that he's
been like counting down. Yeah, he's been able to tell us the number of days it's been that he's been in pain, the number of days he has left till. I mean, he has truly been counting down. I felt so bad. You know, it's been so obvious all season how much pain he's in, And I felt really bad, and I was impressed with how he did it, but I felt so sorry for him at the senior day festivities against Louisiana Tech last week when he, you know, he walks down the whole field, shakes everybody's hand, takes a photo, hugs mom and dad, you know, mm-hmm. all this stuff, goes down the entire field, and then he immediately after the last one got on a golf cart for them to take him back across the other side of the field. You know, it's just, it's hard to watch, but I think, you know, he's, I don't blame him for, you know, wanting to coach in the booth. I think he had an interesting outlook on it, saying it would be detrimental to the team for him to be down there.
It could have been detrimental to him.
With the ice on the ground,
The footing, and probably the best situation, making the best of a non ideal situation, I guess would be how you would call that on Saturday. We've got some thoughts on all of the rivalry games over the weekend. We'll give you those in just a moment.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by right now and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Tomorrow, the Razorback basketball team will be back in action down at Miami. It'll be a 6 o'clock central tip-off, 7 o'clock local time in Miami. Tip-off at, I don't know what their arena's called. But it's going to be on ESPN, too.
I don't know either.
Miami, they're a team that, you know, they've had the Charleston curse the last few weeks. They went to the Charleston Classic. They lost to, I believe it was Drake, Oklahoma State, and VCU. Then they get several days off. And on Saturday, they hosted Charleston Southern, and they lost that game. So this is a Jim Larrañaga coach team. You know, I mean, Larrañaga's got great coaching credentials, taking 2 different programs to the Final Four, one of which was George Mason. And so you know that guy can coach, but this seems like a Miami team that's very beatable. And for Arkansas, the way they've started the season, they need to go get themselves a win over a Power Four team.
Yeah, they really do, especially
– Power Five in basketball
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I know, I keep reframing everything in football. Still shifting into basketball brain. But, yeah, I mean, especially as they get ready to play another big game against Michigan in New York, you know, they need to prove it a little bit against, like you said, Power Five competition after the way they've started this season. And, yeah, I think Miami is definitely beatable. They've had a rough start to the season. I don't know, did they just – lose a lot of guys, because they've had deep tournament runs, I mean, recently.
I couldn't tell
in
you.
Recent years.
I just don't know.
So it'll be interesting to kind of see how Arkansas stacks up against them. Like you said, a Power 5 team that should be, you know, solid competition, better competition than maybe Arkansas has faced in many of its opponents so far, but also, you know, somebody that they still need to watch out for given the way that they've played so far.
The Watsco Center.
Sure.
7,972 seats. That's where this game will be played. Miami 3-4 overall.
Is it on campus?
You're asking me all kinds of questions. I don't know the answers to.
We're not.
It does. It does say it's in Coral Gables, so I would assume that it is on campus, but don't know. Dave O'Brien, Corey Alexander will be on the call on ESPN2. Again, it's going to be a 6 o'clock tip-off. This is part of the SEC-ACC challenge, which could be very interesting this year. SEC looks like a better league to me than the ACC does this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to see how the SEC has grown as a basketball conference in even just the last, 5 years or so? You know, maybe going back a little bit further than that. But I feel like, you know, the reputation of the SEC for so long was that it was mostly about football, not a great basketball conference. And all of a sudden, yeah, it's really come on. I think Alabama has helped a lot with that, you know, how well they've been doing under Nate Oates. So it's just, it's interesting to watch the everybody kind of wrap their minds around a basketball-heavy SEC.
Arkansas 0-1 all time against Miami. I'm going off memory here. I believe that was the 2000 season. Arkansas won the SEC tournament with 4 wins in 4 days, and then they turned around and they went to the NCAA tournament. I think it was in Nashville, and they just didn't look good against
Your
Miami.
Your memory amazes me. I mean, I don't remember what happened last season in the Clemson season that I covered. Like, it's amazing to me how much you remember. I was like a year old when that happened, by the way.
Miami, yeah, March 17th, 2000, Arkansas lost 75-71. But I remember the game being a lot more far-fetched than that. Miami was up by 10 at halftime. Mm. I think they had a much bigger lead. They won the game. They beat Arkansas in the NCAA tournament. That was, well, let's not go down that road. Anyway, Arkansas, Miami tomorrow. You know, speaking of SEC, ACC, if I had a vote in the AP poll, which comes out later today after we record this podcast, so it'll be interesting to see. I suspect Arkansas is going to fall out of the AP poll after the way they played Illinois the other day. And I would think Illinois probably should go back into the top 25. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see is Auburn number one.
Yeah.
Because of what they did out at Maui. And then they have the road win over Houston after they had their in-flight brawl on the way to Houston.
I already forgot about the in-flight brawl.
Who could forget? I mean, it's stirred something in this team.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've beaten Houston. They beat Iowa State. I think they were down by like 18 in that Iowa State game and came back and won. They beat North Carolina. They beat an upstart Memphis team in the championship of the Maui Invitational. It's a good-looking Auburn team.
And where were they picked to finish in the SEC? Because this has been a surprise that they've been this good.
I think they were top three. I think they were ahead.
Okay.
I think the top three, I don't remember the order, because Arkansas was four.
Mm-hmm.
I think the top three, Alabama was predicted to win, and then I think Tennessee or Auburn was two and three.
Gotcha.
In some order.
Yeah.
You know, they've got Jani Broome, mm-hmm. who I think he's maybe the best. You know, Sears is really good at Alabama. Adu Thiroux is really good for Arkansas. Mm-hmm. But Jani Broome might be the best player in the SEC this year.
Yeah.
He's been very dominant.
And he's been at Auburn forever. I think Anthony Christensen, our basketball writer, whipped up an all-get-a-job team before this season, and Broome was definitely on there.
Jani Broome was guarding Corliss Williamson. That's how long he's been at Auburn. He's been there through the good and the bad. So rivalry week over the weekend, you know, the big takeaway from me, I guess I got three big takeaways. Number one is that everybody wants to plant their flag at midfield, unless you're Arizona State, in which case you take your mascot's pitchfork,
yeah,
and you put it in the field at Arizona. That was an interesting twist. It seemed like there was a scuffle or a fight or something at the end of almost every game, including Arkansas, mm-hmm. Missouri. And that had been building up throughout the entire game. There were a couple of personal fouls during that game. One on Arkansas. There was one on Missouri. Maybe one was an unsportsmanlike conduct. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But anyway, 15-yard fouls for, you know, some pushing and shoving and stuff, holding on to face masks after the play. And then, you know, kind of boils over at the end whenever they're shaking hands. But, man, the scene at Ohio State and Michigan was crazy. And then later that night in a game that obviously wasn't watched as much, but Florida State had their own situation at midfield.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I was, you know, it's hard when you're covering a game. You kind of have to keep up with scores loosely and kind of check social media to figure out, you know, what's happening in the other games when, you know, we're at Arkansas games. But, yeah, it was just crazy. And then it kept happening all in the same day. It was very strange. It reminds me of how we've seen, you know, 85 field stormings this season. You know, just for some reason, these things just sort of catch on when one team does it, everybody does it.
And the police pepper sprayed players at Michigan.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I mean, you know, if they've got handguns out there or, you know, weapons or knives or do you have to pepper spray? Because it's not just the players who are getting pepper sprayed. It is everybody it's Jenny Taft trying to do the post-game interview. Everybody who's in that vicinity is going to get.
Photographers, just everybody, you know, I thought that was really crazy. And I don't know if anything has come of that. If, you know, if the police put out any kind of statement, if, you know, are they like glad that they did that? Or is that considered a mishandling of the situation? I don't know.
Is there ever been like a worse just photo op than Ryan Day after the game, after losing to Michigan for the fourth year in a row as a 23-point favorite, standing there as his players come out, just saying, "What happened?"
Yeah.
I mean, it just summed up the entire day for Ohio State, and that kind of leads me to my next point. There is no great team in college football this year.
No.
Oregon, maybe they're still undefeated, but they've certainly had their shaky moments too, and I'm not sure about the schedule they played, to be honest with you. I know they beat Ohio State. I know they beat Boise State. Both of those teams could still be in the playoff. But it's just something about the combination of the portal, the NIL, which those two work hand in hand, and the fact that we've had the change in conferences now. It's just made it to where it feels like college football, you're going to have to reset your expectations for what a good year is.
Yeah.
Maybe reset your expectations for what a bad year is, too.
That's true.
I mean, with as many teams that are 6-6 right now, is 6-6 a better record now than it was 4 or 5 years ago? I mean, I think you could maybe make that argument, because you're going to have conference champions this year who are 9-3, mm-hmm. you know, in the regular season. And so 6-6 really isn't that far off from the best in your conference. Now, it's a little bit different than the SEC, because you got Texas in the championship game, and they're 11-1. Georgia's 10-2. But, you know, they're going to find 12 teams to play in the playoff this year. But it feels like, and maybe this is what they want, it's becoming a little bit more NFL style, where in the NFL, if you go 13-4, you've had a great regular season. And I think that may be what you're going to see in college football moving forward. And, you know, it's again, I think it's just going to have to reset your expectations for what, you know, constitutes a good, solid season. And, you know, I would not be surprised if the types of records that we're going to see in the playoff this year are the type of records that we're going to see moving forward.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'll be interested to see how long it takes for expectations like that to be reset among fans, among media.
The generation.
You know, it changes the way. Yeah, I mean, it changes the way we talk about teams. You know, we have to reframe how we think about these things too. You know, the way we cover things. It'll have to, you know, will it change among coaches? Will it change among players? You know, how that gets reflected and how long it takes for that to kind of take hold across the sport, a sport that, you know, sometimes is pretty slow on the uptake with things like that and with change. But I just think, yeah, you're right. It's I like how different it is, though. I like that you feel and we've talked about this many times in the podcast, how it's really refreshing how it feels like so many teams are still involved and there's so much more that can still happen and stuff that remains to be seen. I don't like a foregone conclusion. I like when we're late in the year like this, we're going into conference championship weekend and there's still a lot to be decided. Teams have a lot to play for. You know, that is so much more interesting to me than watching the same two teams play for the same championship for the 8th year in a row.
Third takeaway from the week. And this has been a takeaway for a long time. The overtime format sucks in college football. It's terrible.
It's not good.
It's awful. I mean, are you telling me that Georgia was better than Georgia Tech the other night? It comes down to luck. And I mean, now some of it is skill and making plays, but a lot of it's just pure luck. Mm-hmm. You know, they make a bad play when you make a good one. Mm-hmm. Because that's you get one play per overtime, one play after you get past the second overtime.
And you get a timeout each one.
You know, I said that it's like if you played college basketball for 40 minutes and then you played 2 5 overtime periods, you said, okay, boys, we're going to decide this on a game of knockout. That's basically what we're doing in college football. I mean, can you imagine the absurdity of having, you know, you're starting five and Kentucky's starting five lining up at the free throw line at Bud Walton Arena, and it's coming down to whether or not Zvonimir Visic can make a free throw in front of this point guard behind him. I mean, it's ridiculous what they're doing in college. And I understand why they've done it. But, you know, when you talk about player safety and we need to, you know, eliminate the number of snaps, and then in the same, you know, basically time frame, you turn around and say, hey, you know, if you're going to play in a national championship game, you might have to play 17 games this year. Like, I mean, make it make sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I hate the overtime format in college football. It's not like the NFL does it any better. I don't think any league of football,
the NFL one is awful.
Any level of football has figured out how to have a good overtime format. I think what college football used to look like when it was, you know, you start every possession from the 25 and everybody gets a chance each overtime, that was a good start. I think you need to move it back further because I think the 25 is just way too easy for teams to score. You know, they did have you know, baked into the old format where you had to go for two past a certain point. I think it was past the second overtime in the old days. Now it's past the first. That helps. But, man, don't determine games based. Can you imagine if we're at the national championship in however many weeks this is before they play?
It's like mid-January now.
Yeah. I mean, in April when they play the national championship game. And they've got, you know, Oregon and Georgia, and it's going to come down to alternating two-point plays. And you're going to determine a national champion based on that format.
Yeah.
And I know they do it in soccer. I know they do it in hockey. But that doesn't mean they should. That doesn't mean they should. Like, I was at the soccer game where Arkansas got eliminated a week ago or so against Stanford. And I'm going to tell you what. If they would have let those teams play 15-minute overtime periods instead of 10, somebody was going to score a golden goal.
Mm-hmm.
The teams were just too tired. There were too many, you know, breakdowns in the defense. There were too many good looks that they both were getting there toward the end. And so it's like, you'll just let this thing play out on the field. Don't Mickey Mouse it. It's sad, I think, what the overtime format's become.
And when did it change to that in college football? Because it hasn't been that long.
It's been within the last four seasons. I don't remember if it was the 21 or the 22 season when it changed. Arkansas beat Kansas at the Liberty Bowl in a two-point format.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Illinois and Penn State had a 9 overtime game. I think that might have been in 2021. But you know, and all of this was because there was 1-7 overtime game between LSU and Texas A&M, and everybody just lost their minds over it. Well, where were these people when Arkansas and Ole Miss were playing 7 overtime, and Arkansas and Tennessee were playing 6 overtimes, and Arkansas and Kentucky were playing 7 overtimes? I mean, like, so.
We got him on another soapbox. Now I know another thing I can bring up when I want to derail the entire show.
The
I can just be like, hey, overtime rules, and we'll just go.
It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's like, you know, give both teams a chance with the ball. Make them go 80 yards. Mm-hmm. I guarantee if you're going to make both of them go 80 yards, there's a pretty good chance that one of them's not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Now, there's a pretty good chance.
Well,
that
but
neither
what if
of
neither of
them
can?
But, you know, it's make them go 40. Make them go 50. You know, you start at the 40 with a good field goal kicker, you're already in scoring position. But this overtime format is no bueno.
Yeah, I had fun watching Georgia Tech, though. It was pretty
crazy. It was
great
entertainment.
It was a lot of
fun. It was phenomenal. I mean, I'm sitting there at, you know, 11 o'clock at night watching this, and I'm wide awake, and it probably took me 2 more hours to be able to go to sleep after watching that.
I wanted it for Georgia Tech. I just always like an underdog. I don't have any personal
I will say this about
Georgia,
that was a championship effort from Georgia. To be down the way they were with 4 minutes left and score 2 touchdowns, did they get some breaks? Sure. But then, you know, to force overtime in the first place, but not only force overtime, but just to keep making the plays in overtime, I thought it was a championship effort from them.
Yeah, it was really impressive. I mean, it was an interesting weekend all around, I think. Just I'm still stunned by the Ohio State result.
That's one of the most stunning
stunning
results I think I can ever remember in college football.
Yeah. And it's just so damning for Ohio State people to, you know, you can't even and it must be so satisfying for Michigan that we beat you with our worst team in
You with our B team.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there's something I wish that rivalry, because I like watching it, but it's always like these giant swings. There's no real in the middle, because, you know, like Tressel, he dominated Michigan for all those years, and Meyer dominated Michigan, and then Harbaugh comes along, and after, you know, the bad, you know, first couple of games that he had against Ohio State, now it's gone back toward Michigan's way, and, you know, Lloyd Carr dominated John Cooper to the point that John Cooper got fired after 13 years against at Ohio State because he couldn't beat Michigan. I just wish that rivalry had a little bit more in between. You know, you win and now we win. Not you win 7 and we win 14. It'd be a lot more fun. Conference championships this weekend. You've got Oregon, Penn State in the Big Ten, Georgia, Texas in the SEC. Feels like all 4 of those teams are going to the playoff, regardless of what happens in the ACC. SMU and Clemson, that's an interesting game. Rhett Lashley, the former Razorback, obviously at SMU. You got Barry Odom, another Razorback tie in the Mountain West Conference championship.
That's a play-in game for the
playoff. It feels like it's probably a play-in game. I don't think you can count out.
I don't think the American is going to get in there.
It feels like it's they're on the bubble, the winner of Tulane and Army.
Yeah.
But it does feel like the Mountain West is a play-in game. We'll have to see how the rankings look when they come out tomorrow. And then Big 12, it's like, who wants to be in this? Arizona State and Iowa State. I said earlier this year I thought Iowa State and Utah were the two best teams in the Big 12. Utah, obviously, they had a stinker of a season. Iowa State, they had a couple of bad results in there, but they've come back strong.
Yeah. I mean, they're in the conference championship game. I mean, yeah, I think they were. That was statistically the most likely matchup when we were headed into this past week of games. But, yeah, it's just, you know, just as we all predicted, Arizona State, Iowa State for the Big 12 title.
That's an interesting game. I don't even know where they – did they play that? Is it still at Cowboys Stadium, at AT&T Stadium?
I thought it was in Las Vegas now. I might be completely making that up. Big 12 championship. We're going to live Google. Perfect
live Google.
Audio.
You should have just asked Google, and we could have gotten her voice on this,
it
too.
It is
I think
Arlington.
It's still at Arlington.
Arlington,
yeah, it is.
Right.
So Iowa State and Arizona
State.
They had
State media and days at Las Vegas. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay. Yeah, out by the pool behind the MGM.
Yep.
All right. We appreciate you being here. We got a lot more to get to this week. Obviously, like we said, basketball back in action. Big recruiting week for the Razorbacks. We'll have a little bit about all of that as we go throughout the week. Hope you'll visit us at wholehogsports.com, and we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.